content, will this allow you to do that as well?
That's all it does. It won't tell you the depth of the snow.
Yeah. So it's just, you're just looking straight at, oh, right, so you won't know the depth. It just tells you strictly the weight.
You can guesstimate the depth. Typically, snow is between 30 and 40% density. So you can just multiply by 2 or, you know, 2.2, and you say that the snow is about this deep. But this is going to tell you, when we go up on the hill and take a measurement, we don't really care how deep it is. Mm-hmm. We care how heavy it is. Because this SWE, they call it, snow water equivalent, is rain on the hill. And whatever that rain amount, whatever that water amount is, equates to feet in the lake.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I still think we got a pick of them.
We'll get a trophy.
I like to tease the guys. I have a pretty good relationship with them, so I always tell the other side that the other side was better. It's just kind of fun stuff. Tiny satellite systems, you know, this has been going on for quite a while. It took a long time to permit this area here to put this satellite stand. I can say successfully we have installed a satellite out there. What you see kind of on this, we're multi-purpose use now. So it's also a radio station for our Tyee Lake lake level sensor, and will be a radio station for the snow pillow as well. So it's getting used.
You might mention where it's at, Robert, just in conjunction with where the plant's at.
In terms of where this is at, the Tyee plant is probably half a mile away from this. This is across a field that can get under saltwater influence from the tides. Typically it does not, but it has on occasion, on a real super high tide, it can get underwater there by a couple inches. But it's you have to cross one of the creeks to get out to it, and you have to cross bear country to get all the way out to it. But the intent, and the only reason why we put it there, it was the only spot that we had a survey done of all the area. It was the only spot where there was a crevice in the mountain that you could see that satellite. And so we put this one out there. Surveys had been done over and over again for other satellite systems, like HughesNet Gen 5, and we couldn't find any spot around the powerhouse that you could see that satellite. But this success story continues. So we got this satellite installed and was commissioned, and they were using it. What it did was increase their speeds from 300 kbps, 0.3 megabytes per second, to 3 megabytes, so about 1,000% increase. But still, 3 megabytes per second is not all that fast. It's a lot better than it was. So to them, it was lightning speed. But we still wanted to get to the next level. It's expensive. The satellite system out there, the monthly charge, is fairly expensive. And so we also wanted to increase the speed. If we could get HughesNet like out at Swan Lake, then we wanted to do that. More studying, we found a spot at the end of the road, and that's about 2.5 miles away. So feasibility study was, can we see the satellite? Can we get the signal from this remote location to the remote location, which is Tyee? And you know, how reliable is it going to be? So we've got this out there now. This is built. We utilize solar panels we had in storage for a project previously that intended on putting communications up at the lake. We utilize existing equipment, installed a stand, used the same similar type of radios I used for the snow pillow and the Tyee Lake sensor. And we installed this out there, and it's working. They went from 0.3 to 3, and now they're at 30. So they've seen 10,000% increase. There is still one issue I've got to work out, and it's on the top here, is I have an antenna, and this thing works 90% of the time, but the other day when it was really falling down with the rain, we lost signal for a little bit. So the antenna is a 5 dB gain antenna, and I've got a quote out for a 17 dB gain antenna, which would triple the signal strength, and that should plow right through the way. So this is a pretty good success story. Right now it's a feasibility. It's a temporary setup. And it eventually will probably come for, to the board for a capital investment to build a permanent stand and get this thing permanent for their, this is for their business now, for their emails, for browsing the internet and doing that kind of thing.
So Robert, you did talk a little bit about the fact that this was across some distance from the plant. And I know at certain times of the year, there's a lot of bears around. How do you guys address that?
The bears eating that or the bears eating people?
Eating people.
Stay close to the pickup.
That's one of the inherent understandings that out of Taiyi is that you have a vehicle with you at all times, solid cab vehicles. We understand that it's important. When I installed this, there was a brown bear 20 yards from me, and I seen the whites in his eyes. No joke. And he ended up swimming across. He was across the river. He ended up swimming across and then trying to sneak through the woods. So, yes, you always have a solid cap and ensure that if you are going to need to walk any distance, you take a shotgun with you or something of that nature. As far as equipment goes, that's why we want to build a better stand. Because I think at some point a brown bear might think that looks like food to him, or at least it'll be fun to play with. So I don't want the solar panels to get destroyed. But this is a feasibility study right now. We eventually will have to go after a permit. This is just a temporary test success so far, but I still got a little vetting to do.
Okay. So just a question on safety there. So do we provide the shotguns for the guys? Do the guys provide their own shotguns? Clay?
So bear safety is an issue out there, of course, because we do have quite a few bears that consider that home as well. And as a component of our safety training that TSS does for us, every spring we go into pretty good detail on how to, manage our relationship with the bears. And it's a topic that comes up every spring that we address. But as far as general camp rules though, that's why all the rigs have doors on them. We've got that little electric golf cart thing that everybody seems to enjoy a lot. It's got doors on it too, so if you're going very far at all from the camp, you don't leave without a rig. Bear education kind of is a two-way street. We had a sow and some cubs that was coming a little bit close last season, and so we ended up getting some rubber bullets for the 12-gauge, and we kind of had to educate them a few times. But rubber bullets, they don't do any damage, but the bears learn pretty quick that there are some boundaries that need to not be encroached on, and they seem to learn pretty quick. So
provide the guys with their shotguns and the ammo and everything.
What's that?
We provide the shotguns.
Correct.
For the guys. And then do we, and I know for most Alaskans it's not a deal, but if people are coming up to work there that aren't familiar with guns, they're put through a gun safety program. And
we've got bear SOPs, and there's when newcomers come to the plant, you sit down and you have a talk with them about the bear situation, any visitors or anything like that.
Yeah.
We don't let the newcomers handle 12-gauge, that goes out with a member of the crew or staff or whatever. So
I'm going to get accompanied.
Yeah.
No, just from a liability standpoint, even though everybody thinks they know how to use firearms, not everybody does. So it's just one of those things that you probably want to have some kind of SOP that goes through a standardized program of qualifying people with the firearms so that if there is an accident, you can say we covered it off. But that's just a question. Good. Thanks.
Continuing on, protected relay testing. Last year we did some testing out at Swan Lake, and this year the outage was conducive to doing completing all our testing. We tested a total of 12 relays, I believe. I have the report, which consists each relay, for example, I was discussing with Bob Lynn last night about Crystal Lake here has maybe a dozen relays in it that could be replaced with one. And so the really testing that I performed was 11 or 12 of those ones. So really, if you were to go back any day, that'd be 100 relays that were tested. And each test consists of each phase, so phase A, B, and C, and then the neutral. So it's probably 1,000 injection tests that were performed to verify that our protective relays, which protect our equipment and our people, are functional and operational and successfully pass calibration testing. This is a test set that the board approved two or three years ago. And so we have developed automated test suites so that this this program can continue. It really helps with us. Typically, we would contract this out, but it really helps to have this done in-house because we can utilize outages at opportune times and not take outages for specific testing requirements. This is a requirement, although we do not follow under NERC and SIP requirements, this is a standard practice to test your relays on a 3 to 5 year interval. Well, that was successful. We did that both at Swan and Tyee. Next year, we'll be looking at the Petersburg and Wrangell substations. Tyee battery discharge testing. This is an example of the battery monitor system that I installed out at, this was Tyee. Swan has a very similar system. It shows you every cell and the condition of those cells in terms of the color. You can see during the testing that cell 69, that's where it dropped off from a nominal voltage down to getting into the yellow, and within minutes that went from yellow to red and was failing very quickly. The test equipment here shows you exactly how that cell responded. All the other cells you can see here are up there at this is actually two cells, so 1.3 volts, 1.2 volts, and that cell 69, it just collapsed. The same thing happened on cell 25 at 8 hours. That right there, if we were to actually happen to need these batteries at that 2.5 hour mark, that battery would collapse, but we wouldn't know without battery monitoring or what we already have in place. And then it would take out the sister cells. It would start becoming a burden to all the cells around it, and you wouldn't get the capacity out of it that you need to maintain the plant. So that was a success. We found out there are issues, and like I mentioned yesterday during our R&R report and request from the board, this definitively said yes, we do need to invest in our batteries at Tyee, and it was a good test. And we will continue to do this test every 5 years at each plant. We also have batteries at Petersburg and Wrangell substations, so those will also be tested. Nice thing about doing it in-house again is you can do one a year during the outages and just swap them so that you're not taking a full outage to try and do all five sites.
Plus, it saves us a lot of money. We'd be bringing an outside contractor up on a routine basis.
Yeah, moving in a contractor every year for this, that saves us probably $20,000 a year. So that's what I have for my report. I kind of wanted to go into the SEPA operations update here now. This has been, because of the drought, this kind of been a touchy topic for a while now. Now that we have moved from 2018 rainfalls to more of an average rainfall in the month of September, we've seen a significant increase in the lake levels, which has really helped the organization here. Looking, I kind of want to just go into a little background for Jack there. Every year we present an operations plan to the board for approval, and in that operations plan, we discuss SEPA operations throughout the year. That being, we present guide curves on how we intend to operate the lakes, to draft the lakes and deliver loads. We present what our predicted loads are for each community. based on our historical loads. And then we present a draft limit for board approval, that being a set lake elevation that we, without board approval, cannot draft the lakes lower than. That gives each respective community a certain amount of water to have for diesel contingency, if you will, in case they need it during diesel operations. So we put together, typically it's done in December of each year to discuss the preceding year or the following year's operations plan. But this last year we had to do it in June as well because of the drought and where we were. We had to change the operations plan slightly and address some issues that were outstanding. But this is an update. This is where we are today, what we have done the last 3 months since the last board meeting and the outcomes from that. Looking at the Alaska Drought Monitor, we're still in a D3 extreme drought. They still consider us in a drought because water in lakes is still lower than average. However, they have recently in the last week said that the condition is improving. Although they have not lifted it to a D2, which would be more of a, drier conditions instead of extreme, or it would be a drought condition instead of extreme drought. I suspect they will probably move that to D2 in the next month if October rains are consistent with averages, which we've seen in September. As far as rain records, Swan Lake has a rain gauge out there that's been there since 2009, I believe. And so it's really nice to compare year over year with a rain gauge at one of the plants. We've recently installed one at Tyee, so hopefully, you know, in 10 years we'll have this data for Tyee as well. Looking at this, you can see that in 2012, for example, we had 146 inches of rain. 2013, 2014, pretty much the same, in the mid-140s. In 2015, we had 167 inches, so we got a really wet year. We were spilling all year. 2016, 147. 2017, it dipped a little bit, but it wasn't alarming, and it didn't affect us all that much. And then 2018, we lost about 30 inches of normal. And that's what really kicked in the drought phase. Looking at where we are today, on August 25th, if we go back 1 month ago, we had the same amount of rain as in 2018 at the same time. So we had the same exact look, just like 2018 and in 2019 on August 25th. But 1 month later, and what a difference September makes, and that's what killed us last year. 1 month later, we have 16 inches more than we had in 2018. So that's a huge deal for this organization. Septembers and Octobers are typical fill months. We didn't receive a September last year, and that's really what put a bind on our operations. Looking at lake elevations as we sit today, Tyee again on August 25th, right before we started moving into the rainy season, just reached the sales curve. I'm going to back up just a little bit for Jack. Have you seen this sales and guide curve yet?
No.
So in June, typically we build a... Can't get my mouse out there. All right. Typically we build a guide curve on how we're going to operate. And so let's pretend like the green line's not there. That would typically look like this red line. The board in June, or actually before June, in I think it was a February board meeting, asked that the organization build a kind of a band of when we would curtail Tyee to maintain a certain amount of water in there for the northern communities. Mm-hmm. If we were below that, which we were at the time, we would want to see a spot where we would start sales and then a spot where we would stop sales, and there be an operation band to operate within. So we developed that in June, and looking at this, we can see that on August 25th, we crossed that sales ban. That being said, we have the ability now, board approved and in accordance with the operations plan, to make sales from Tyee up until we reach the red line. Now, we never want to reach the red line because we want to continue to make sales and utilize Tyee for all its benefits, which is isochronous support, like we talked about, frequency support, and it's also spinning inertia on the grid and available power for the whole system in the event that one of the machines goes down. Looking at Tyee as of today, and actually it's probably higher than that. Has anybody checked the lake level as of today?
That's right about where we are today.
Okay. 1344, it's about 25 feet above the curtailment grid, which is good. We have 25 feet to work with here. That's a great amount of flexibility that it gives the organization. Swan Lake is currently at elevation 305. That was yesterday.
Those two divots have evened out now.
Okay. And that's about 15 feet above what our original guide curve was. I wanted to go over this optimizing output. I said I would visit this here in a second when I was discussing efficiencies. Presented at the June board meeting there, Jack, was a change in operations on shifting power north and south across the SDI. We have typically shifted power across north and south, but there, due to the drought, there was a lot of concern with power moving north and south, and so we wanted to make sure the board was in agreement with and understanding of how this really benefits the organization. So on typically, if we didn't have the SDI and prior to 2009, if there was an 8-megawatt load for Petersburg and Wrangell, Tyee would provide 8 megawatts of load. If there was only 5 megawatts worth of water, let's say on average we could only deliver 5 megawatts of water out of Swan because of the lake level, then Swan Lake would be running at 5 megawatts. It's a 12.5-megawatt machine. There's two of those. But that 5 megawatts really only runs at 82% efficiency. So you can gain upwards of 10% more efficiency out of that unit by changing your operation strategy. For example, if we only ran Swan Lake 50% of the time, let's say during the day, and we ran it at 10 megawatts, it's still the same equivalent. We sent that 5 megawatts to Ketchikan and we sent another 5 to the north. 50% of the time, Swan Lake would be operating at 93% efficiency. That's a 10% gain. And then at night, Swan Lake would be off. There would be no efficiency loss, so you're still 93% efficiency for the day. We'd still be sending 5 megawatts to Ketchikan, the same average, 24 hours a day, but now 5 megawatts would be returned from Tyee to Ketchikan. That would give us 10% more efficiency at Swan Lake. The reason being is that, as I mentioned, Tyee machines are a lot flatter efficiency curves because of the head on them. You can operate those units between 2 megawatts and 12.5 megawatts with very little change in efficiency. They have multiple nozzles that can be turned on and off, and they have a really flat efficiency curve. But Swan, on the other hand, when you start dropping off megawatts, the efficiency drops off significantly. So how is that operations change in June? How do the results look? Prior to the board June meeting, because of the lake water level at the time, we didn't want to draft the lake too fast, and KPU operations as well didn't want Swan Lake to be drafted too fast. They want to be able to utilize the rental diesels in a manner such that in collaboration with Swan, and both all the diesels and all the hydro can maintain a certain level. So on average, we were producing about 6.4 megawatts out of Swan Lake. By changing to that, closing the SDI, shifting megawatts to the north, shifting megawatts to the south, we moved that up to 9.2 megawatts. Now that's actually higher because there was a time in this period where we were running isochronous and we had to run the units a little lower. We had no choice. We had no SDI. But 9.2 megawatts, if we just take that number that we changed operations on, that moved the efficiency from 87% up to 93%. So that gave a 6% increase just in 3 months. That doesn't sound like much, but in terms of numbers, which doesn't sound like much either, but over a course of a year, it's a huge amount. Taking what Swan Lake generated over that 3 month period was 12,477 megawatt hours. That's from June 25th to September 25th. With a 6% gain in efficiency, we saved 749 megawatt hours. Otherwise, that would have gone out to tailways. You multiply that by four, you're looking 3,000 megawatt hours. Kind of what we were talking about trying to save last year. All right, so it's a big deal, 3,000 megawatt hours and just savings by making one small change to our operation. I would say that would be a very good success.
Plus about $50,000 in revenue per quarter.
That's, yep. Yeah. About $50,000, and that's being real conservative because, like I mentioned, that we got more than that 93%. We're probably more at the 94% range. But we weren't operating at 9.2 for the whole time. There was a period in there where we were doing isochronous, and so, but I used the most conservative number. Yeah, so about $50,000 to $60,000 in SEPA revenues, and then
significant savings if you're displacing it with diesel.
Yeah, so multiply that by two or three, however your numbers work out, and that's how much diesel saved the community by making a small operational change. Why haven't we done that in the past? It's a lot of perception. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to shift Swan Lake water to the north, and then with the drought, we didn't want to send Tyee to the south. There was a lot of concerns with operations in general, and so we were able to relieve those concerns at the June board meeting by showing on the screen how this would operate. And then this is the second part of it. We would accumulate and we would report how megawatt hours were being transferred across the SDI. And so every week we give this report right here. This is our cumulative megawatt hours across the SDI. During this time period right here was net zero. So you can see we were sending power to the north, and then we would send power to the south, and then back to the north, south, north again. So this whole sum turned out to be, if you were to add up everything, was zero. So transfer of energy, we moved that efficiency from 83 to 92. And since on August 25th, when we started seeing the rains come in, we crossed that sales curve. We began making sales actually on August 27th, the morning of, after we put a new plan together. And since then, we began making sales, and over the course of a month, about 188 megawatt hours have been shifted to the south. And you can see from the response of the lakes that they're still going up. So it's helped a lot with, we're still the same operations, we're still shifting power north and south with Swan Lake. It's just not 5 megawatts to the north and 5 megawatts to the south. It's 5 megawatts to the north and maybe 6 megawatts to the south. We're actually making sales out of Tyee, preventing it from going into spill if we do get in October like we have in the past, and then also utilizing that new operation strategy. That's the update that I have for everyone, but that's, yeah, questions?
Robert, no, I just, quick, maybe for Carl, so the diesel burns in Ketchikan, you're still not burning diesel, are you, or?
No,
how does that work?
We did during the maintenance windows, but my understanding right now is we're not doing diesel.
So when did you stop burning diesel, sir?
I don't have a firm date.
That would have been August 27th.
August 27th when they opened the lineup. Yeah.
And the air quality issues that you were having, Carl, did those now simply disappear? Or
we've got a modified permit from ADEC, Title V permit, that allows us to now burn based on consumption as opposed to hours. They're still looking to make us put in air monitoring station, and we're going to do modeling and try to take that to a higher level and see if we can get an exemption from that, because that would be about a half a million dollar expenditure. We have to put that in.
And we're not going to get anything out of it?